Mrs. Warren's Profession. Act 1. Summer afternoon in a cottage garden on the eastern slope of a hill, a little south of Haslemere in Surrey. Looking up the hill, the cottage is seen in the left-hand corner of the garden, with its thatched roof and porch, and a large latticed window to the left of the porch. A paling completely shuts in the garden except for a gate on the right. The common rises uphill beyond the paling to the skyline. Some folded canvas garden chairs are leaning against the side bench in the porch. A lady's bicycle is propped against the wall under the window. A little to the right of the porch, a hammock is slung from two posts. A big canvas umbrella, stuck in the ground, keeps the sun off the hammock, in which a young lady is reading and making notes, her head toward the cottage and her feet toward the gate. In front of the hammock, and within reach of her hand, is a common kitchen chair with a pile of serious-looking books and a supply of writing paper on it. A gentleman walking on the common comes into sight from behind the cottage. He is hardly past middle age, with something of the artist about him, unconventionally but carefully dressed and clean-shaven except for a mustache, with an eager, susceptible face and very amiable and considerate manners. He has silky black hair with waves of gray and white in it. His eyebrows are white, his mustache black. He seems not certain of his way. He looks over the palings, takes stock of the place, and sees the young lady.
I beg your pardon. Can you direct me to Hindhead View, Mrs. Allison's?
This is Mrs. Allison's.
Indeed. Perhaps. May I ask, are you Miss Vivie Warren?
Yes.
I am afraid I appear intrusive. My name is Praed. Oh, Praed, don't let me disturb you.
Come in, Mr. Praed. Glad to see you.
Very kind of you indeed, Miss Warren. Has your mother arrived?
Is she coming?
Didn't you expect us?
No.
Now, goodness me, I hope I have not mistaken the day. That would be just like me, you know. Your mother arranged that she was to come down from London and that I was to come over from Horsham to be introduced to you.
Did she? My mother has rather a trick of taking me by surprise to see how I behave myself while she is away, I suppose. I fancy I shall take my mother very much by surprise one of these days, if she makes arrangements that concern me without consulting me beforehand. She hasn't come.
I'm really very sorry.
It's not your fault, Mr. Praed, is it? And I'm very glad you've come. You are the only one of my mother's friends I have ever asked her to bring to see me.
Oh, now this is really very good of you, Miss Warren.
Will you come indoors, or would you rather sit out here and talk?
It will be nicer out here, don't you think?
Then I'll go and get you a chair.
Oh, pray, allow me.
Take care of your fingers. They're rather dodgy things, those chairs.
Oh, now do let me take that hard chair. I like hard chairs.
So do I. Sit down, Mr. Praed.
By the way, though, hadn't we better go to the station to meet your mother?
Why, she knows the way.
Suppose she does.
Do you know, you're just like what I expected. I hope you are disposed to be friends with me.
Thank you, my dear Miss Warren, thank you. Dear me, I'm so glad your mother hasn't spoilt you.
How?
Well, in making you too conventional. You know, my dear Miss Warren, I am a born anarchist. I hate authority. It spoils the relations between parent and child, even between mother and daughter. Now, I was always afraid that your mother would strain her authority to make you very conventional. It's such a relief to find that she hasn't.
Oh, have I been behaving unconventionally?
Oh, no. Oh, dear, no. At least, not conventionally, unconventionally, you understand. But it was so charming of you to say that you were disposed to be friends with me. You modern young ladies are splendid. Perfectly splendid. When I was your age, young men and women were afraid of each other. There was no good fellowship, nothing real. only gallantry copied out of novels, and as vulgar and affected as it could be. Maidenly reserve, gentlemanly chivalry, always saying no when you meant yes. Simple purgatory for shy and sincere souls.
Yes, I imagine there must have been a frightful waste of time, especially women's time.
Oh, waste of life, waste of everything. But things are improving. Do you know, I have been in a positive state of excitement about meeting you ever since your magnificent achievements at Cambridge, a thing unheard of in my day. It was perfectly splendid, your tying with the third Wrangler. Just the right place, you know. The first Wrangler is always a dreamy, morbid fellow in whom the thing is pushed to the length of a disease.
It doesn't pay. I wouldn't do it again for the same money.
The same money?
Yes, £50. Perhaps you don't know how it was. Mrs. Latham, my tutor at Newnham, told my mother that I could distinguish myself in the mathematical tripos if I went in for it in earnest. The papers were full just then of Philippa Summers beating the senior Wrangler. You remember about it, of course? Well, anyhow, she did, and nothing would please my mother but that I should do the same thing. I said flatly that it was not worth my while to face the grind, since I was not going in for teaching, but I offered to try for fourth Wrangler or thereabouts for £50. She closed with me at that, after a little grumbling, and I was better than my bargain. But I wouldn't do it again for that. £200 would have been near the mark.
Lord bless me, that's a very practical way of looking at it.
Did you expect to find me an unpractical person?
But surely it's practical to consider not only the work these honors cost, but also the culture they bring.
Culture, my dear Mr. Pratt. Do you know what the mathematical tripos means? It means grind, grind, grind for 6 to 8 hours a day at mathematics, and nothing but mathematics. I'm supposed to know something about science, but I know nothing except the mathematics it involves. I can make calculations for engineers, electricians, insurance companies, and so on, but I know next to nothing about engineering or electricity or insurance. I don't even know arithmetic well. Outside mathematics, lawn tennis, eating, sleeping, cycling, and walking, I'm a more ignorant barbarian than any woman could possibly be who hadn't gone in for the tripos.
What a monstrous, wicked, rascally system! I knew it! I felt at once that it meant destroying all that makes womanhood beautiful.
I don't object to it on that score in the least. I shall turn it to very good account, I assure you.
Pooh! In what way?
I shall set up chambers in the city and work at actuarial calculations and conveyancing. Under cover of that, I shall do some law with one eye on the stock exchange all the time. I've come down here by myself to read law, not for a holiday, as my mother imagines. I hate holidays.
You make my blood run cold. Are you to have no romance, no beauty in your life?
I don't care for either, I assure you.
You can't mean that.
Oh, yes, I do. I like working and getting paid for it. When I'm tired of working, I like a comfortable chair, a cigar, a little whiskey, and a novel with a good detective story in it.
I don't believe it. I'm an artist, and I can't believe it. I refuse to believe it. It's only that you haven't discovered yet what a wonderful world art can open up to you.
Yes, I have. Last May, I spent 6 weeks in London with Honoria Fraser. Mama thought we were doing a round of sightseeing together, but I was really at Honoria's chambers in Chancery Lane every day, working away at actuarial calculations for her, and helping her as well as a greenhorn could. In the evenings, we smoked and talked and never dreamt of going out except for exercise, and I never enjoyed myself more in my life. I cleared all my expenses and got initiated into the business without a fee in the bargain.
But bless my heart and soul, Miss Warren, do you call that discovering art?
Wait a bit. That wasn't the beginning. I went up to town on an invitation from some artistic people in Fitzjohn's Avenue. One of the girls was a Newnham chum. They took me to the National Gallery.
Ah!
To the opera.
Good!
And to a concert, where the band played all the evening. Beethoven and Wagner and so on. I couldn't go through that experience again for anything you could offer me. I held out for civility's sake until the third day, and then I said, plump out that I couldn't stand any more of it, and went off to Chancery Lane. Now you know the sort of perfectly splendid modern young lady I am. How do you think I shall get on with my mother?
Well, I hope,
It's not so much what you hope as what you believe that I want to know.
Well, frankly, I am afraid your mother will be a little disappointed. Not from any shortcoming on your part, you know. I don't mean that. But you are so different from her ideal.
Her what?
Her ideal.
Do you mean her ideal of me?
Yes.
What on earth is it like?
Well, you must have observed, Miss Warren, that people who are dissatisfied with their own bringing up generally think that the world would be all right if everybody were to be brought up quite differently. Now, your mother's life has been, I suppose you know.
Don't suppose anything, Mr. Pratt. I hardly know my mother. Since I was a child, I have lived in England, at school or at college, or with people paid to take charge of me. I have been boarded out all my life. My mother has lived in Brussels or Vienna, and never let me go to her. I only see her when she visits England for a few days. I don't complain. It's been very pleasant, for people have been very good to me, and there has always been plenty of money to make things smooth, but don't imagine I know anything about my mother. I know far less than you do.
In that case... But what nonsense we are talking. Of course you and your mother will get on capitally. What a charming little place you have here.
Rather a violent change of subject, Mr. Pratt. Why won't my mother's life bear being talked about?
Oh, you mustn't say that. Isn't it natural that I should have a certain delicacy in talking to my old friend's daughter about her behind her back? You and she will have plenty of opportunity of talking about it when she comes.
No, she won't talk about it either. However, I dare say you have good reasons for telling me nothing. Only mind this, Mr. Pratt. I expect there will be a battle royal when my mother hears of my Chancery Lane project.
I am afraid there will.
Well, I shall win, because I want nothing but my fare to London to start there tomorrow, earning my own living, by deviling for Honoria. Besides, I have no mysteries to keep up, and it seems she has. I shall use that advantage over her, if necessary.
Oh, no. No, pray, you'd not do such a thing.
Then tell me why not.
I really cannot. I appeal to your good feeling. Besides, you may be too bold. Your mother is not to be trifled with when she's angry.
You can't frighten me, Mr. Pratt. In that month at Chancery Lane, I had opportunities of taking the measure of one or two women very like my mother. You may back me to win, but if I hit harder in my ignorance than I need, remember it is you who refuse to enlighten me. Now, let us drop the subject.
One word, Miss Warren. I had better tell you. It's very difficult, but...
Here they are. How do, Mother? Mr. Pratt's been here this half hour waiting for you. Well, if you've been waiting, Pratty, it's your own fault. I thought you'd have the gumption to know I was coming by the 3:10 train. Put your hat on, dear. You'll get sunburnt. Oh, I forgot to introduce you. Sir George Crofts, my little Vivi.
May I shake hands with a young lady whom I have known by reputation very long as the daughter of one of my oldest friends?
If you like. Will you come in, or shall I get a couple more chairs? Well, George, what do you think of her?
She has a powerful fist. Did you shake hands with her, Pratt?
Yes, it will pass off presently.
I hope so. Allow me.
Let Sir George help you with the chairs, dear. Here you are. You'd like some tea, wouldn't you? I'm dying for a drop to drink. I'll see about it. Just look at him, Pratty. He looks cheerful, don't he? He's been worrying my life out these 3 years to have that little girl of mine shown to him. And now that I've done it, he's quite out of countenance. Come, sit up, George, and take your stick out of your mouth.
I think, you know, if you don't mind my saying so, that we had better get out of the habit of thinking of her as a little girl. You see, she has really distinguished herself, and I'm not sure, from what I have seen of her, that she is not younger than any of us.
Only listen to him, George. Older than any of us. Well, she has been stuffing you nicely with her importance.
But young people are particularly sensitive about being treated in that way.
Yes, and young people have to get all that nonsense taken out of them and good deal more besides. Don't you interfere, Praddy. I know how to treat my own child as well as you do. What's the matter with him? What does he take it like that for?
You're afraid of Prad.
What? Me? Afraid of dear old Praddy? Why, a fly wouldn't be afraid of him.
You're afraid of him.
I'll trouble you to mind your own business and not try any of your sulks on me. I'm not afraid of you, anyhow. If you can't make yourself agreeable, you'd better go home. Come, Praddy. I know it was only your tender-heartedness. You're afraid I'll bully her.
My dear Kitty, you think I'm offended. Don't imagine that. Pray don't. But you know I often notice things that escape you. And though you never take my advice, you sometimes admit afterwards that you ought to have taken it.
Well, what do you notice now?
Only that Vivi is a grown woman. Pray, Kitty, treat her with every respect.
Respect? Treat my own daughter with respect? What next, pray? Mother, will you come to my room before tea? Yes, dearie. Don't be cross, Praddy.
I say, Prad.
Yes?
I want to ask you a rather particular question.
Certainly.
That's right. They might hear us from the window. Look here. Did Kitty ever tell you who that girl's father is?
Never.
Have you any suspicion of who it might be?
None.
I know, of course, that you perhaps might feel bound not to tell if she had said anything to you, but it's very awkward to be uncertain about it now that we shall be meeting the girl every day. We don't exactly know how we ought to feel towards her.
What difference can that make? We take her on her own merits. What does it matter who her father was?
Then you know who he was?
I said no just now. Did you not hear me?
Look here, Prad, I ask you as a particular favor. If you do know, I only say if you know, you might at least set my mind at rest about her. The fact is, I feel attracted.
What do you mean?
Oh, don't be alarmed, it's quite an innocent feeling. That's what puzzles me about it. Why, for all I know, I might be her father.
You impossible!
You know for certain that I'm not?
I know nothing about it, I tell you, any more than you. But really, Crofts, oh no, it's out of the question. There's not the least resemblance.
As to that, there's no resemblance between her and her mother that I can see. I suppose she's not your daughter, is she?
Really, Crofts?
No offense, Prad. Quite allowable as between two men of the world.
Now listen to me, my dear Crofts. I have nothing to do with that side of Mrs. Warren's life, and never had. She has never spoken to me about it, and of course I have never spoken to her about it. Your delicacy will tell you that a handsome woman needs some friends who are not, well, not on that footing with her. The effect of her own beauty would become a torment to her if she could not escape from it occasionally. You are probably on much more confidential terms with Kitty than I am. Surely you can ask her the question yourself.
I have asked her often enough, but she's so determined to keep the child all to herself that she would deny that it ever had a father if she could. I'm thoroughly uncomfortable about it, Prad.
Well, as you are, at all events, old enough to be her father, I don't mind agreeing that we both regard Miss Vivi in a parental way. As a young girl who we are bound to protect and help, what do you say?
I'm no older than you if you come to that.
Yes, you are, my dear fellow. You were born old. I was born a boy. I have never been able to feel the assurance of a grown-up man in my life.
Praddy! George! Tea!
She's calling us.
Hello, Prad. Why, Frank Gardner. What on earth are you doing here?
Staying with my father.
the Roman father. He's rector here. I'm living with my people this autumn for the sake of economy. Things came to a crisis in July. The Roman father had to pay my debts. He's stony broke in consequence, and so am I. What are you up to in these parts? Do you know the people here? Yes, I'm spending the day with a Miss Warren. What? Do you know Vivi? Isn't she a jolly girl? I'm teaching her to shoot with this. I'm so glad she knows you. You're just the sort of fellow she ought to know. It's ever so jolly to find you here, Prad. I'm an old friend of her mother. Mrs. Warren brought me over to make her daughter's acquaintance. The mother, is she here? Yes, inside at tea.
Praddy, the tea cake will be cold.
Yes, Miss Warren, in a moment. I've just met a friend here.
A what?
A friend.
Bring him in.
All right. Will you accept the invitation? Is that Vivi's mother? Yes. By Jove, what a lark. Do you think she'll like me? I've no doubt you'll make yourself popular as usual. Come in and try. Stop a bit. I want to take you into my confidence. Pray don't. It's only some fresh folly like the barmaid at Red Hill. It's ever so much more serious than that. You say you've only just met Vivi for the first time? Yes. Then you can have no idea what a girl she is. Such character, such sense, and her cleverness. Oh, my eye, Prad, but I can tell you she is clever. And, need I add, she loves me.
I say, Prad, what are you about? Do you come along?
Hello? Sort of chap that would take a prize at a dog show, ain't he? Who's he?
Sir George Crofts, an old friend of Mrs. Warren's. I think we had better come in.
Frank?
Hello. The Roman father.
Yes, Governor, all right, presently.
Look here, Prad, you'd better go in to tea. I'll join you directly.
Very good.
Well, sir, who are your friends here, if I may ask?
Oh, it's all right, Governor. Come in.
No, sir, not until I know whose garden I am entering.
It's all right. It's Miss Warren's.
I have not seen her at church since she came.
Of course not. She's a third wrangler. Ever so intellectual. Took a higher degree than you did. So why should she go to hear you preach?
Don't be disrespectful, sir.
Oh, it don't matter. Nobody hears us. Come in. I want to introduce you to her. Do you remember the advice you gave me last July, Governor?
Yes, I advised you to conquer your idleness and flippancy, and to work your way into an honorable profession and live on it, and not upon me.
No, that's what you thought of afterwards. What you actually said was that since I had neither brains nor money, I'd better turn my good looks to account by marrying someone with both. Well, look here. Miss Warren has brains. You can't deny that.
Brains are not everything.
No, of course not. There's the money.
I was not thinking of money, sir. I was speaking of higher things. Social position, for instance.
I don't care a rap about that.
But I do, sir.
Well, nobody wants you to marry her. Anyhow, she has what amounts to a high Cambridge degree, and she seems to have as much money as she wants.
I greatly doubt whether she has as much money as you will want.
Oh, come, I haven't been so very extravagant. I live ever so quietly. I don't drink, I don't bet much, and I never go regularly to the razzle-dazzle as you did when you were my age.
Silence, sir!
Well, you told me yourself, when I was making every such an ass of myself about the barmaid at Red Hill, that you once offered a woman £50 for the letters you wrote to her when—
Frank, for heaven's sake! You are taking an ungentlemanly advantage of what I confided to you for your own good, to save you from an error you would have repented all your life long. Take warning by your father's follies, sir, and don't make them an excuse for your own.
Did you ever hear the story of the Duke of Wellington and his letters?
No, sir, and I don't want to hear it.
The old Iron Duke didn't throw away £50, not he. He just wrote, Dear Jenny, publish and be damned. Yours affectionately, Wellington. That's what you should have done.
Frank, my boy, when I wrote those letters, I put myself into that woman's power. When I told you about them, I put myself, to some extent, I am sorry to say, in your power. She refused my money with these words, which I shall never forget. Knowledge is power, she said, and I never sell power. That's more than 20 years ago, and she has never made use of her power or caused me a moment's uneasiness. You are behaving worse to me than she did, Frank.
Oh, yes, I dare say. Did you ever preach at her the way you preach at me every day?
I leave you, sir. You are incorrigible.
Tell them I shan't be home to tea, will you, Governor, like a good fellow?
Is that your father, Frank? I do so want to meet him.
Certainly. Governor, you're wanted. My father, Miss Warren.
Very glad to see you here, Mr. Gardner. Mother, come along, you're wanted. Let me introduce. Why, it's Sam Gardner, gone into the church. Well, I never... Don't you know us, Sam? This is George Crofts, as large as life and twice as natural. Don't you remember me?
I really...
Of course you do. Why, I have a whole album of your letters still. I came across them only the other day.
Miss Vavasor, I believe.
Nonsense. Don't you see my daughter there?